Hey, sexy listeners, Dawn Sarah here. Before we get to this incredible episode that is all about parenting and emotional intelligence, I just want to remind you that it's still Masturbation May. And if you haven't been one of the super lucky listeners to treat yourself to one of the five incredible toys that we have available through our podcast exclusive sale for Masturbation May, then pop over to sexgetsreal.com/May, because who doesn't want an Enjoy or a magic wand? And if you treat yourself, I'm throwing in a bottle of free lube that I personally love, plus the potential for some other naughty little goodies. Get your hands on yourself, treat yourself to a toy, and here comes the rest of the episode. Hey everybody, it's Dawn Sarah with this week's episode of Sex Gets Real, and joining me this week is somebody that I'm super excited to introduce you to. It's Nadine Thornhill. Hi, Nadine.
Hi.
Yay, thank you so much for being here this week.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah, for those of you that participated in the Explore More Summit, Nadine was one of the experts that I interviewed. Nadine is a sexuality educator and a parenting expert. There's like so much that you do, Nadine, that I adore. I love your approach to talking with kids. I love your approach to just talking about sex in general and like conversations about consent and bodies, and like the stuff that you're doing in the world is amazing.
Oh, wow. I'm so flattered.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun, and I love doing it, and I love talking about it. So let's talk away.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm really excited that you're actually on this episode, because I've had a couple of questions come in over the past couple of months that I just kind of have been sitting on until like a parenting and or an expert that knows how to talk to kids came on, because I can run my mouth all I want, but I'm not a parent. So, yeah, I think these will be really perfect for you. Actually, one of them is from like early February. So this poor person's been waiting quite a while for an answer. If you're ready, we'll just jump right into the first one.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So I got an email from Chris that says, "Porn, help." The email says, "Dawn and Dylan, you two are rock stars. Your show is awesome, and I thought this might be a good question for you." So this was back when Dylan was still on the show. That's how old this email is. And it says, "I caught my teenage son watching porn, and it was some pretty rough, violent stuff. I've never really talked to him about porn, but it seems like I should now. I don't want to shame him, but I'm a little concerned about the stuff he was looking at. Any thoughts, tips, or resources for me? Keep up the great work. The world needs you, Chris." Oof.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a really common concern for a lot of people who have adolescents, and even some people who have sort of tween-age children. So, you know, sort of in the like 9 to 12 corridor. Just because porn is ubiquitous at this point, yeah. And it's virtually impossible to block access to pornography because it's on the internet. And so if it doesn't even have to be if your child specifically has like a smartphone or a tablet or a device like that, it can just be like if their peers have it, they can see it. So, youth are looking at porn. So a couple of things around this. The first one is to know that it's not unusual behavior, and that the type of, if you catch your child looking at pornography, the type of porn that they're watching may not be an indication of what their sexual desires are, or it may not be what you would think it was based on the content. So when you talk to people about what kind of porn they watch, you know, people have sort of a range of tastes and subject matters they like to look at, but it's often sort of what's in the underlying subtext that turns them on, or there's just one small aspect of, you know, the storyline or the genre that really kind of, you know, triggers their sexual arousal, but it's not necessarily like, oh, they're watching violent porn, they're turned on by violence.
Yeah.
It could be something like, they're watching violent porn and they're turned on by the power dynamics but they aren't actually interested in hurting anyone per se in real life. Mm-hmm. Porn can often represent our fantasies, and our fantasies are not necessarily what we want to do in our reality. So yes, that's the first thing to understand, that for the most part, it's not, and there's research around pornography that it's somewhat inconclusive, but the research that's emerged so far with youth and pornography seems to indicate that for youth who already have sort of violent or misogynistic ideas, the porn will reinforce that.
Yep.
But if that's not where their thinking is anyway, seeing violent porn doesn't seem to sort of put that idea in their head. Mm-hmm. They do have some ability to sort of filter and say, you know, this part of it turns me on, but this part of it would never be acceptable to me. Yeah. So that's one thing that's important to know. In terms of having the conversation, I think a great way to talk about it is to sit down and be honest. Mm-hmm. I don't know if his kid is aware that his parents saw him or his family member saw him, but if he is, you can sit down and say, okay,
yeah,
look, this is what happened. We both know what happened. If he doesn't know, then you can sit down and say, listen, mm-hmm, I happened to walk by while you were watching this thing. I think the first thing to start off with is, you know what? That's really normal. Mm-hmm. Like, it's normal to be curious about sex. It's normal to be curious about how people have sex. You know, a lot of kids your age will go online. They will, you know, Google sex or Google, you know, a sexual position or a sexual term, mm-hmm, and come across pornography. And it's normal to be curious about what that is and to want to look at it. So I would start there, just reassuring them that it's normal. The next thing I think is to, you know, start asking questions. So what did you think, mm-hmm, about, you know, what you saw? How did it make you feel? Mm-hmm. Things like that. And, you know, depending on their relationship and depending on the kid, they may or may not open up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you can get into a little bit of, you know, your values. So everyone has different values around pornography. So, for example, if, you know, you're someone where you're like, I'm not really comfortable, mm-hmm, with you looking at this, you know, you can say that. Like, I'm not comfortable with you looking at this. You know, this is why. These are my values around pornography. These are my values around sex. Mm-hmm. You may be someone who you want to talk about, well, what are my values around violence? What are my values around power imbalances? What are my values around misogyny? And just get into that a little bit. Like, you know, I'm not comfortable, or I really feel that it's wrong to treat your romantic or sexual partner in this way. You know, this is why I feel it's wrong. This is why it makes me uncomfortable. You know, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
What would you think about treating someone like this in real life as opposed, mm-hmm, to pornography? Like, there's a whole host of questions that you can get into. And again, you don't have to do it all at once.
Right.
Like, it doesn't have to be like, we're going to sit in your room and we're going to have like 3 hour long conversation and we're going to break it all down and then it's going to be resolved. Like, no, like, you can even just say, like, for the first conversation, you just be like, look, I know this is happening. Like, it's totally normal. I'm not mad at you. Mm-hmm. I would like to have a conversation about this. You know, we don't have to do it now, mm-hmm, but just a heads up.
Yeah.
And then you can, you know, go away and then come back in a couple of days or a week or whatever, mm-hmm, and come back to it and be like, you know, I just want to talk a little bit about what you were watching and, mm-hmm, you know, maybe what you found appealing about it and why it may or may not be problematic in real life and real life sex versus porn and all of that. So break it down. What else did they say? What else was in their question? I want to make sure I answer everything.
Let me pull it up. Okay. You know, what's striking me as you're talking to is so much of the advice, and I think that this is usually when I hear really good sex or relationship advice, that advice holds true for like non-sexual or non-relationship situations too. And I think I love so much what you're saying about if you want to have this conversation and it might be potentially kind of awkward, it's okay to say, I'd like to have this conversation and let's come back to this. And then you revisit it in a couple of days or a week. I think that could be true for two adults trying to navigate something really awkward too. You know, instead of like, we have to talk about this right now, you know, and like, yeah, just giving that space. Okay. So he says, I caught my teenage son watching porn. It was some pretty rough stuff. I've never really talked to him about porn, but it seems like I should now. Okay. So I think, yeah, that's the other thing is I hope all parents realize at this point that all kids look at porn at some point.
Yeah. And even if they're not doing it actively, they are very likely around someone else who is.
Yep.
So just the odds of your child or your teen seeing pornography at some point is really, really high.
Yeah.
And yeah, just to understand, that doesn't mean that they're bad kids. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them. It doesn't mean that they're really any different from the way, you know, we were when we were teenagers. It's just that they have more access to content.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Just the last thing I wanted to mention about having that conversation is that apart from talking about your values and owning your values, you can also own your feelings. And sometimes that can make it easier to ease into the conversation. If you say like, just say what you're worried about. So, mm-hmm. you know, if your kid is looking at something that's the content is violent or the content just seems to sort of run contrary to the values that you're trying to share with them, to say like, yeah, I saw you were looking at this and I was just a little bit worried that, you know, maybe you think this is how you should behave in relationships, or maybe you think that this is the way that you're supposed to have sex. And I just really want you to know that there are other options, or that, you know, this could have XYZ consequences, or this could make your partner potentially feel this way. So I'm worried, and I don't want you to sort of look at this as the model of how to have sex in your real everyday life, because then you're making it about you. You're not making it about you're doing something wrong. You don't understand this.
Yep.
You're not capable of discerning the difference between fantasy and reality. You don't really know where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of gives them more of a chance to sort of be like, okay, I'll talk to you because I'm assuaging your concerns, as yeah. opposed to proving to you that I'm not, you know, some crazy deviant teenager. And as for resources, one of my favorite videos, it's really short, it's YouTube. It's on YouTube, is Cindy Gallup's Make Love Not Porn.
Yeah.
And I love that because she's not she's not anti-porn. She's not saying like porn is terrible and you're a terrible person if you look at it. She's really just pointing out some of the differences between what we see in pornography, which is often a contrived fantasy version of sex, versus the reality of sex and what, you know, sex means and what bodies are like and all of that for the average person in their normal everyday life.
Yeah. I can't remember who said it, but I remember somebody said, kids don't go into the Transformers movie and then leave expecting that to be a real life situation.
Exactly.
But kids do often watch porn and think that's how sex should be. And in fact, adults do that too. Lots of adults watch porn and think, well, then why aren't you orgasming this way? Or why doesn't my body look this way? Instead of realizing it's a form of entertainment. And I think that that's a really powerful way to have a conversation with young folks about porn, of, you know, values aside, just making sure they understand that porn is edited and unrealistic in most cases if it's mainstream, and just a form of entertainment that happens to involve this very specific activity. Because I think that that's where we get into so much pain and so many problems ourselves, is feeling like what we're seeing in mainstream porn specifically is an accurate representation of sex.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big reasons that happens is because, unlike something like the Transformers movies where we see, you know, regular cars all the time that do not turn into robots, youth especially don't really have anything else against which to gauge the sex they're seeing in porn, because we don't talk to them about sex. They obviously don't see other people having sex. We're not, you know, a culture where a lot of people are naked and show their bodies a lot. And so it's like, if that's all they see, then that by default becomes incredibly influential in the way that other types of entertainment may not, because they're like, but this is all I know. This is the only information I have in a lot of cases.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point of, none of us really, until we actually start having sex, and often it takes many times for us to start to realize how different sex can be with different people. But, you know, we don't have anything to gauge sex against.
Yeah.
We don't watch our parents have sex for the most part. You know, we may catch them having sex, but in our culture, that's not really a part of the way that we're raised. And you know, we don't have materials that depict different types of sexual encounters with real bodies and real situations. And so I think that's such a powerful point that I've never thought about, of one of the reasons we know Transformers is fiction is because we see regular cars and regular streets and regular people all of the time. So when something comes up that isn't similar to those, we know that it's made up.
Yeah.
But we don't have anything that shows us that what we're seeing in porn may not be very representative of real life, because we don't have real life images. That's fantastic. Oh my gosh, you're so smart.
Oh, thank you.
I love that so much, and now I'm going to think about that for like a week. Yeah, but hopefully, Chris, that gave you a nice jumping off point, you know, and to all of the parents listening out there, I think it's okay for the conversation to be awkward, but I think it's more important to have those awkward conversations and to actually make sure conversation around porn is happening with all children everywhere, rather than just waiting for it to be something that you discover or turning a blind eye, because it's happening.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's absolutely happening. Do you want to go to someone asking about a college age kid or someone asking about a 5 or a 6 year old next?
Oh, let's go to 5 or 6 year old.
Okay, here we go. So Conflicted Mom writes, "Hello, Dawn. I feel embarrassed to ask this, but I don't know where else to turn. I think my son, who is 5 or 6, may be different, as in gay or trans or something. He's a sweet boy, but as he gets older, I find a lot of his behavior different from that of his older brothers. I want to support him, but I worry about him too. Do you have any suggestions for how to talk to him about gender or how I can be a better parent to a kid that may be really different from his peers, especially as he gets older? Feeling scared and alone, Conflicted Mom."
Aww.
I know.
Okay. Well, first of all, I mean, I absolutely do not want to invalidate her feelings, but this is a great question. I want to say don't feel embarrassed, but I also don't like to tell people what kind of feelings right. they can have. So I'll just say, like, I'm really glad that she reached out to you and asked the question. So what can she do to support her son, who I guess she's just observed that he's different? And for children who are different, it can be a range of things. Generally speaking, when a child is transgender or is non-binary, there are some behaviors that are sort of more common to see. Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave anyone with the impression that, like, okay, if your child is trans, they will absolutely behave in this way, and if they're not behaving this way, they're not. It's just sort of things to maybe look out for.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, if the three guidelines that I will often hear read about are trans and non-binary children are insistent, persistent, and consistent. So if your child is saying to you, you know, I'm not the gender I was assigned, I'm a different gender, or I'm not a gender, if they're saying that to you over and over and over again, if they're constantly insisting on, you know, dressing in ways that are not conventional for the gender that they were assigned at birth, if they seem to, like, very consciously try to identify with people that are of a different gender than they were assigned at birth, things like that. And if that's just happening very consistently and they're very adamant about it and they kind of won't let it go, those can be pretty good signs that, you know, their gender is just different from the one they were assigned at birth. Mm-hmm. In terms of sexual orientation, yeah, they may or may not have a word for it, because children, generally speaking, don't have the same kind of sexual romantic attraction that older kids do or adults do. Mm-hmm. But again, you may just notice that they may or may not be different in the way that they express themselves and they move around. It could also just be that, you know, that's your child's personality and it's just manifesting differently. But parents usually have a pretty strong instinct about, you know, their children and what it means. So it doesn't mean you have to sit down with your kid and be like, all right, We're going to have like an in-depth conversation about your gender identity and your sexual orientation. But there are things you can do even at this age just to support them mm-hmm. and to let them know that, you know, they can be themselves around you and that you're a safe space. And then in time when they're ready, if they feel safe and secure, then they're going to be able to talk to you and reveal themselves as it feels right for them. So one thing, and I actually recommend this for all parents, regardless of what you believe your child's sexual or gender identity is to read books and to look for, you know, television programs and media that really reflect gender and sexual diversity in a positive way. Yeah. So even things like, you know, if you watch like sitcoms with your five-year-old, like family sitcoms, you know, there are family sitcoms that feature, you know, gay people or, you know, two moms or two dads or trans people. Like, it's okay to watch that with them. I've watched with my own child, he's 9 now, but even when he was younger, like, we'd watched a few documentaries. Like, we watched this one documentary that was about was it about drag queens, and they were going through this pageant circuit, and it was, you know, it was just fun and beautiful and the costumes. Yeah. And I decided to watch it with him because I just wanted to normalize for him the idea that there are all kinds of ways to express yourself. Like, even at, like, these are all men, mm-hmm. but it was like, even as a man, you can express yourself in a highly feminine way, and it's completely legitimate, and there are people in the world who do this. Books is a great way because, and especially books aimed at kids, because it not only gives them a vocabulary to start to talk about maybe some of these feelings they're having, mm-hmm. it also gives you as the parent or the grown-up in the family a vocabulary to talk to them. Because a lot of times we think of it in a very adult context and you're like, I don't know how to break it down
right
on a five-year-old level. One book that I absolutely love, it's called Blue, A Crayon Story.
Ooh.
It's very simply told, and it's the story of this crayon that is – the crayon itself is blue, but the wrapper is a red wrapper.
Mm.
And so it's this anthropomorphized crayon, and it's going through its life and its, you know, its day-to-day. It has its, like, you know, crayon parents and crayon teachers and crayon friends, and – all the crayons keep trying to get it to act like a red crayon and draw things that are red, like strawberries and fire trucks. And he tries and tries and tries, and he can't do it. And then I don't remember how it comes to pass, but someone, I think his crayon teacher, says, draw the sky. And he's like, I can't do that. I'm blue or I'm red. Mm-hmm. And there's just try it. And he draws the sky and it's perfect. And he's like, oh, I'm blue. And then, you know, he like blossoms and draws all these blue things. And it's like, he's like, oh, okay, I know who I am now. And I love that so much. It's just a great way of breaking down for kids in like a very safe, accessible way that, you know, sometimes everyone thinks that you're one thing because of your label, but you're just something else.
Yeah.
And when you discover who that someone else is, it's great. And, you know, of course, everyone accepts the crayon and, like, is happy for the crayon. And so, you know, even just reading books like that and just starting there, you know, communicates to your child that, you know, this is one of my values in our family. We accept people the way they are. Like, that's a great positive thing. It's okay to be different. It's okay if you're not who people think you are. And just to make it safe for your child. And, you know, and give them some time and... if they feel safe and secure over time, they'll be able to reveal more of themselves as they grow and develop. And, you know, but I think it's just the most important thing is to make them know that it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. And when you're ready, if this is what's going on, you can talk to me about it.
I think that's such wonderful advice. And I love using books as a way to establish words that you can both share and understand. I love everything by Corey Silverberg.
Yeah.
And S. Baer Bergman now has a publishing company with kids' books.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like Flamingo Press or something.
I believe it's Flamingo Press.
Yeah. I'll put a link up on Sex Gets Real so everybody can find it. But a couple of friends of mine just had a baby. And so for their baby shower, I bought them like 8 books. They're a lesbian couple. And I bought them like 8 kids' books that were, like, all from Esper Bergman's publishing company and Corey Silverberg's and, you know, the And Tango Makes Three book, just so that they'd have this, like, full library of books about all different types of people and all different types of bodies. And to, like, just start that conversation pretty much from day one. I think that's so powerful. And I also like how you're saying, by creating a space that's safe for the kid to kind of realize that no matter who I am, it's going to be okay because my parents values, you know, they value people who are different. Because you never know how your child's going to grow up. I saw some people in a group that I'm in on Facebook recently talking about parenting, and a mom was kind of saying, my little boy likes everything pink. And all of these other parents were like, oh yeah, when my little boy was younger, he wanted Barbies and dolls and he wanted to wear head to toe pink. He wanted to wear princess dresses all the time. All of his favorite movies were princess movies. And now he's an adolescent and he's totally not interested in those things at all. And he's into like monster trucks, you know, and just like allowing for their kids to just like try lots of different things on. And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, that's really common for little kids. And part of the reason that kids of all genders, a lot of them when they're little, gravitate towards like pink and princess and all that is because that's just, it's like a heightened reality. It's fantasy. It's mm-hmm. more fantasy than sort of some of the things that tend to be targeted towards boys. Mm-hmm. Like boys' dress-up costumes are still like some variation of pants and a shirt.
Right.
Whereas, you know, the quote unquote girl stuff or the stuff that's targeted towards girls is like floofy and it's all of these vivid colors and it's like sparkles and big skirts and crazy hats. And it just appeals to a child's natural sense of exuberance and fantasy. Yeah. So at this age, sometimes you don't know. It just may be that you have one child who, you know, maybe a little bit more staid in their aesthetics, and there's another child who's like, ah, everything pretty. So whatever that turns out to be, if you're willing to accept it, your kid is going to be okay. And I guess the last thing I want to say is you are absolutely not alone in this. It can feel like it sometimes, but there are lots and lots and lots of little kids who, it does turn out that they're gay or they're trans or they're non-binary. And that's not unusual. Mm-hmm. But I can understand how it can feel very isolating at times. But I think just by virtue of the fact that she's asking the question and reaching out makes me feel fairly confident that, you know, she's someone who, you know, wants to embrace her child, loves her kids, you know, is parenting from a place of caring and wanting to do what's best for her kids. So like, if that's where you're starting, you're golden.
Yeah. I think I totally agree. The fact that she's asking this question means she's thinking about it.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to pretend like it's not there or changing the kid. And, you know, I think like that act of denial is something that can translate very easily to a child realizing like there's something about me that mom doesn't accept or doesn't want to talk about.
Yeah. She's coming at it from a place of how can I support and, you know, make things good for my child is amazing. So,
Yay. Well, I'm so glad you wrote in Conflicted Mom, and hopefully that was helpful. I'm going to put links up on Sex Gets Real for this episode that will have links to the blue book that you mentioned, Nadine, and then also to Corey Silverberg and to S. Bear's publishing company, so that anybody that's looking for books that are just like beautifully inclusive and have very simple language, it'll be nice and easy for you to find. Do you know if there's any support groups online or parenting resources for like gender nonconforming kids or trans kids?
So there's a website called, and there also are an organization called Gender Spectrum. Mm-hmm. They're amazing. They're based in the US. I think they might be out of California, but I'm not 100% sure. Mm-hmm. They have a ton of resources, articles, community resources, books for families who have trans or non-conforming kids. Mm-hmm. There's PFLAG, which is Parents for Lesbian. What is it?
I think it's lesbian.
I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
Oh my God.
That's so sad.
Okay, but PFLAG is a resource for parents of gay, lesbian, and bisexual children. Mm-hmm. There's an organization here in Canada based in Ottawa, and they just changed their name, so I have to remember their name. They used to be called Pink Triangle Services, and they just changed their name. And I can't remember what their new name is now, which is terrible. But yeah, they have a lot of great resources online. They also have a support group, but it runs in Ottawa. So unless mm-hmm. the person is in Ottawa, so you can't go there. But you can still like read and connect with people mm-hmm. online also. So they're great too.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hopefully that gives Conflicted Mom a jumping off point. And definitely write back in if you have any further questions or anything like that. I'm happy to provide resources.
Yay.
Okay. So we got a question from Auntie Awkward.
Okay.
Yeah. So it says, I'm so glad I found you on Spotify and I need your help. I am very close with my two nieces and I want to help one of them when it comes to sex. Here's why. One of my nieces is very adventurous, rebellious, and sexual. She's had a number of boyfriends, and we've talked about sex a few times. I know she has a very clear idea of who she is and how to advocate for herself. Her sister, though, is the exact opposite. She's very introverted, and the few times I've tried to ask her about sex, she's basically said she doesn't want to talk to me. I'm a college professor, and I see young people at college all the time who are totally unprepared for the drinking and the sex and the hookup culture. I'm just not sure how to talk to her about it or if there are resources I can give her that she can look at on her own time so that I don't have to have that awkward I'm your aunt and let's talk about sex thing. Thoughts, suggestions, I want to help her be prepared and I feel like she's woefully unaware of what the realities of college life will be like. Thanks, Auntie Awkward.
Okay, I love this question.
I know, me too.
I am aunt to four amazing girls, and one of them is a teenager, one of them is a tween, and then two of them are little. But so I can kind of relate to this, being the aunt who always wants to give sex advice, although my nieces never want to hear it from me. So I will live vicariously through this question. So, trying to get, I'm assuming that her nieces are teenagers, although she didn't say specifically, but I guess it sounds like they're coming up on going to college.
Yeah.
So trying to make a teenager talk to you about anything when they don't want to is a Herculean task, and doubly so when it's about sex. Mm. This is the thing I think. Like, you, especially when they reach this age, I'm like, really, most of what you can do is make yourself sort of an askable family member, but you can't make them say anything to you if they don't want to. So I'm going to start with a resource. There's a couple of resources. So there's Heather Corinna's book called Sex, mm-hmm. or S-E-X, I think. It's amazing. Like, it covers so much. It's a really comprehensive resource. She's very relatable. Totally non-judgmental. Like, it covers like dating and STIs and drinking and hookup culture and like everything you could want. And sometimes with youth who are more introverted, something like a book is going to be more up their alley. They may not want to sit down and have a real conversation with you, but that doesn't mean that they're not interested in the information. It doesn't mean that they're not curious. And even if they're not right now, sometimes it's nice when they have like just one nice comprehensive resource that they can go to when these issues do start to come up for them. Yeah. And they can sort of consult that. So you can give them, you know, you can gift her that book. I love that book. It's amazing. Another resource, which is online, is this series of videos called The Midwest Teen Sex Show.
Oh.
So they're not producing actively right now. It's something that they were... It's this troupe of improv actors who live somewhere in the Midwestern United States, and they realized that there wasn't really any good sex education happening for teens in schools. Yes. So they decided to produce this series of videos. And they're very good in the sense that they're very much rooted in fact. They're very sex positive, but they're also unflinching and hilarious and irreverent. I will just, every once in a while, I'll be like, I'm going to watch the Midwest Teen Sex Show again because they make me laugh so much.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And even though they're a few years old, like I think they're 5 or 6 years old now, most of them are still entirely relevant, mm-hmm. you know, today. So I still use that as a resource and show them to people. And, you know, it's just a different approach from, you know, grown up trying to relate to the youth of today, which is how I feel sometimes when I talk to two teens. I'm like, hello, I'm a 40-year-old woman. I'm going to pretend that I'm down with the youth. And that, like...
Yep.
And then I use my like 40-year-old old lady slang and colloquialisms, and they're just like, stop. Like, just because you're on Instagram, do not think that you understand anything about what we're going through. And then they're like, who's on Instagram anymore anyway?
Right. Like, we're all on Snapchat now.
Exactly. So it's that sort of situation. So yeah, sometimes using resources like videos and stuff are great. Lacey Green on YouTube is another amazing educator. Mm-hmm. She's relatively young. Her videos are like very quick, easily digestible, super sex positive, like packed with information. And again, that's something that, you know, you don't have to watch them all at once, but you can just be like, hey, check out this channel. Mm-hmm. And she can, you know, watch videos on her own time. And there's a ton of them. Lindsay Doe is another YouTuber who's amazing.
Yeah.
Again, really quick. Packs in lots of information, but does it in a really accessible way. So those are all resources that I like to recommend for people talking to teens. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I will tell adults sometimes, and like, it can be hard to swallow sometimes, and like, don't underestimate a teenager's awareness of what's going on, and don't underestimate their resilience and their ability to navigate new situations, especially sexually. Mm-hmm. Teenagers are, just because they're teenagers and they're developing into adults, and part of that development is that you're going to go into the world and you're going to have new situations, and you're going to have to kind of sort them out and figure out what's going on and figure out how you feel about them. So part of becoming a new adult is going to be going into situations where you're like, whoa, okay.
I have no idea what to do.
I didn't know what to do. And so I think one of the best things you can do is going back to being like an askable, approachable adult. So that if they come up against a situation where they're like, whoa, I kind of feel like I'm in over my head with this, I don't know what to do, you can still be there as the person that they can go to be like, I'm in over my head. What do I do? But encountering that in and of itself isn't a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It's not the worst thing in the world if a teen gets to college and is like, I wasn't entirely prepared for this and I don't understand it.
Yeah.
There are a ton of situations that we can't really understand them until we're in them. Like, mm-hmm. you have to have the experience to sort of learn from it. And I know with sex, that can be really scary to people because there can be pretty serious consequences in certain situations when, you know, sexual things don't go as planned, and particularly mm-hmm. with, you know, drinking and drugs. I know there's often a concern, especially with women, of, you know, sexual assault and sexual harm, and that is an entirely real mm-hmm. concern. You know, there's just fears, you know, of being brokenhearted or being in a situation where you do something you regret, and there can be a lot of heavy emotional fallout from that. So I completely understand as a parent why it's scary to say, okay, I can't prepare them mm-hmm. for everything, or I don't think that they're prepared for this. And so I'm not going to say, like, don't be afraid or don't be worried or don't do what you can to help them be prepared, but also sort of prepare yourself. There is going to be something.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be prepared. And so just be there as the supportive person for them to either come back and be like, this really went wrong. Mm-hmm. And I really need someone right now because I'm hurting and I need a safe place to heal and to process this. Or, you know, in a better case scenario, it's just like, oh, I came up against a situation. I didn't know how to handle it. I pulled myself out, but now I need to talk to you about this mm-hmm. and figure out what this is and how to deal with it the next time I go in. Yeah. So I think, one of the best things you can do is just supportive, 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 that no matter what happens, no matter what you come up against, I am going to be here for you. I love you, mm-hmm. you know, and we will figure it out. And yes, as you go through, you know, your college or not college, depending on what their future plans are, you know, as you're growing up, as you're going through life, you know, as long as I'm alive, I'm here for you and we will figure this stuff out.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think you're so right. You can't force teenagers to engage in conversation if they really don't want to, for the most part. You know, I mean, like, to a certain degree, you can force a teenager to sit down. But instead framing it as, I think, here are some resources, and I'm here if you want to talk, I'm here if you have questions, you know, and just making yourself available. I love that advice, because I think that also allows them to have a little bit of autonomy and choice about, like, when am I ready and what types of questions do I have, instead of us as adults. I think we have this habit of assuming that we know better than them.
Yeah.
And often I think that they actually may have different needs than we think that they do, and insecurities in places where we may not have guessed.
Absolutely. And I mean, this is something that I keep having to relearn with my own child, who's only 9, but, like, very strong-willed and, you know, has his own ideas about things, is that I will come in and be like, I'm going to sit down and I'm just going to, like, blast information at you and A, think that you're just going to listen to me because I'm talking, which never works. But also that I'm like, I can't just, like, throw information at him and then think, like, oh, he'll be prepared now because I told him that this stuff is going to happen. I'm like, it's not the same as it actually happening and actually being in the moment. Like, you can tell a teenager all you want to, like, there's going to be parties and there's going to be drinking and you're going to come across, you know, this kind of pressure and this kind of pressure, and you're going to meet someone and you're going to want to have sex and you're going to feel like this and you're going to feel like this. It's not the same as when it actually is happening to you, and all of those feelings and hormones and reactions are happening in your body, and you're alone with the person, and there's, you know, wine, and there's this, and there, like, it's not the same.
Yeah.
So even if you tell them everything,
yep,
that can only prepare them so much.
Yeah.
For the reality of what it's like. And yes, I constantly find myself saying to my 9-year-old, like, not that he's going to parties or anything, but just with 9-year-old stuff, I'm like, but I told you this was going to happen.
It's not the same, Mom.
Right. I'm like, I can't just preemptively live your life for you.
Right.
By talking to you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. But I'm like, I'm just trying to protect you and give you the heads up.
Because you love him.
Because I love him.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, maybe you can avoid some of the pitfalls that I fell into. But I'm like, okay, I'll just let you do this on your own. And then if something goes wrong, I'll be here and I'll, like, comfort you and, like, have pain in my heart because you're my child and it hurts when you're hurt. But yeah.
Yeah. So just out of curiosity, for folks who have kids in their lives, what do you think is one of the best ways to just make it really clear to young people that you are a safe space for them to come to, that you're accepting of them, that, you know, basically, like, how can you be a sex positive role model for young people in your life so that they know they can come to you? What do you think is kind of, like, one of the most important things for that?
Okay. One of the most important things. So one of the things that does work for me, and I think this is one of the most important things, is asking questions about sex. And asking them open-ended questions so that they can give you information.
Mm-hmm.
Because A, that shows that, like, yeah, we can totally talk about this. B, it shows them that it's okay for them to have knowledge, curiosity, observations around sex, that it's not this, like, totally taboo subject. And C, it makes them talk more.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is something I constantly have to remind myself because I love to chatter away. But the conversations I have with my son are so much richer and so much more productive if I start off asking him a question as opposed to lecturing. So it's interesting because we were talking about porn earlier, and that subject came up with him, like, just last week for the first time.
Wow.
Because in his class brought it up, and he asked me, what is porn? And so the first thing I said, before like diving in, like my instinct was like, okay,
I'll tell you all the things.
I'm going to tell you everything. So I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, well, have you heard that word before? And he's like, yeah, I think so. And I was like, well, do you have any ideas about what it was? And then, you know, he told me, and he was like a little bit on track, but not quite. So then I, you know, gave him like a really simple definition of what it was. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh. And I said, you know, why do you think people might watch that? And, you know, he told me what he thought. And I said, well, you know, what do you think about someone, you know, your age looking at it or seeing it? And he told me what he thought. And then I kind of dived in with, you know, some of my own values. And I was saying, like, you know, well, I, you know, it really is something that's made for adults, and it's not for children. And I think that mm-hmm. that's really something that I think is better to watch when you're older or a little bit. And I was like, you know, what do you think about that? And so we just had this whole conversation. It was only like 10 minutes or something, but mm-hmm. I was like, okay, good. Okay. Like, porn is on the table now.
Yeah.
And it was really good timing because I had just been thinking like a couple weeks beforehand. I'm like, oh, like he's 9. He's starting to like hang out with friends a little bit independently. Mm-hmm. You know, I know some of them have smartphones. Like, I got to figure out how to bring this up somehow because it's going to become relevant soon. And then that window opened. I was like, yay.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think just asking questions, like mm-hmm. let them tell you what they think, what they know, you know, and then you can dive in and just be like, oh, you know, this thing that you think you know is maybe not accurate. Let me give you some accurate information. You know, this is what you think about this aspect of sexuality. This is what I think, or these are my values, or this is what I hope that, you know, you will do or take into consideration. And then it can be like a back and forth. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would be my answer to that question.
And the thing I love about that is that's like the best advice for any relationship that you have, really. You know, I mean, instead of assuming that you know what your partner thinks about something, ask what they think about something. Or instead of assuming that, you know, what your friend meant by a comment, asking what they meant or thought about a comment. I mean, I think that's such powerful advice of, instead of telling ourselves stories about somebody else's experience, inviting somebody else's experience, and then being able to actually have a nice dialogue about that. That's powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because I sort of learned and developed this strategy for families talking to their kids about sex. And now, it's sort of spilled over into other relationships in my life and other adult relationships. And, mm-hmm. and exactly what you said, I'm like, oh, this works good all the time.
I've stumbled on a universal truth.
I think it's just the universal truth of listen to other people.
Right.
Talk sometimes. Finally, at 40 years old, I've learned to keep having relationships.
I'm figuring this thing out that's called conversation.
Exactly.
I'm the same way. Especially when it comes to sex. You know, like, I like to share all my thoughts because I have so many and I get so excited. And sometimes I forget, like, the other person probably does too.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I love that. So I know you said you weren't quite ready to talk about this, so I can clip this out if you want to, but I know you mentioned that you've written a book and it doesn't have a publisher yet, but I'd love to know just like, what is the book about?
Okay. Yeah. I will definitely tell you what it's about. The title is The Positive Guide to Family Sex Ed. And in my job, I read a lot of books that are about parenting and specifically parenting and dealing with kids and talking about sex. And I sort of found that there were a couple of things that were missing in general. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of really great books about sort of how to have the conversation about sex, like just sort of general techniques that you can use, and they're really effective. There are a couple of books about childhood sexual development, but I find a lot of them are very formal and academic and maybe not super accessible. And where I really found there was a lack is there's like, there are not a lot of books that are aimed at adults that talk specifically about the information that kids need. Like, there are books that are aimed at kids and teenagers that talk about, you know, puberty and, you know, contraception and safer sex and things like that. But the parents don't have the information. And in my work, a lot of times, once we get past the, okay, this is how I bring it up, the next part is, but I don't know anything about this. Like, I want to talk to my kids about safer sex, how do I do that? And I'll say, okay, well, you know, you really need to go beyond just the, you know, use a condom line mm-hmm. or protect yourself line and get really specific. And then I find people are like, okay, but what?
Yeah.
Like, what else is there?
Right.
Or, you know, like, what are the sexually transmitted infections? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. And the only reason that I knew is because this is my job. And, you know, I've worked with organizations where, you know, it was my job to know every single sexually transmitted infection and the symptoms and the treatments and, you know, what all the safer sex practices were and things like that. So the book is basically divided into three sections. So the first part of the book is basically how to have the conversation. So techniques you can use, how to share your values, how to share facts, how to avoid myths, how to, you know, lots of questions that you can ask your kids mm-hmm. To get into these conversations, you know, what to do when you're feeling awkward or scared or whatnot. The second part of the book is child and adolescent sexual development, and it's sort of chunked down into like the stages. So like, you know, infancy and toddlerhood and childhood and tween and older teen and younger teen. And it just sort of talks fairly broadly about what they may be going through developmentally and also sort of where they're at and their ability to sort of comprehend certain topics, just so parents can maybe have some idea of like, okay, this is probably where my kid is now in terms of like their sexual feelings or not sexual feelings and their body and whatnot. This is what's going to be coming up. Things like that, so they can sort of have a guideline of like what they might want to start talking about. And then the third part is, I think it's like 10 or 12 chapters, and I got just go through like a bunch of just different topics. So there's mm-hmm. like abstinence, there's anatomy, there's puberty, there's gender, there's sexual orientation, there's just sex, because I find that's missing all the time. Like, we want to talk to our kids about actual sex and how to feel good and enjoy it. There's contraception, there's conception, there's pregnancy options, there's all of that, so that if you're like, okay, I want to talk to my child, for example, about abstinence, mm-hmm. I don't really know sort of what the facts around abstinence are, then you could go to the book and be like, I'm going to go to the abstinence chapter and I'm going to read it. And it's like, okay, now I kind of have the basics. I can start the conversation. You know, my child just came to me and said, like, I'm worried I have chlamydia. Well, I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. So you can go to the sexually transmitted infection section and be like, oh, okay, chlamydia, this is what it is. This is how it's treated. These are the symptoms, you know, mm-hmm. here's how you get tested. Just stuff like that, so that I really wanted it to be a comprehensive guide that, you know, anybody can have at their fingertips if they have a child in their life and they're yeah. just like, you just need information. And the other thing is I wanted to try and make it as inclusive as I could about, of, you know, children of different genders, also children of different sexes, including intersex, because that was another thing that I noticed yeah. that seems missing from a lot of the current literature, that there was very much an assumption that, you know, your child is either a boy or a girl, your yeah. child is the gender they were assigned at birth, your child is straight,
yeah.
which a lot of people's kids are, but there are also a lot of people whose kids aren't, mm-hmm. and I find that they have to go to a whole separate set of resources, which is fine. I think you will do that anyway. But what happens for a lot of parents I talk to is that if their child comes out as queer, or, you know, they're a different gender, or they're, you know, a different sexual orientation, it comes as a complete shock because any of the information they've been reading has all been predicated on, well, your child is straight and cisgender.
Right.
And then they're like, what?
Now what?
What?
Yeah.
And so I was like, I would love to see sort of a, for lack of a better word, sort of mainstream inclusive resource that just assumes off the bat that there's a wide range of children mm-hmm. and that they, you know, sort of, you know, across the gender spectrum and across the spectrum of sexual and romantic orientation, and that all of that is under the umbrella of just, you know, a normal kid, because yeah. it is.
That sounds amazing, and I think the world needs that book.
So if anyone out there is listening and wants to publish my book,
that's right, if we have any people in the publishing industry listening, we have a book for you. Well, I would love for you to tell everybody how they can find you and stay in touch, because you're doing such awesome work. And I know for people who have kids in their lives, either getting some resources or finding out when your book's going to come out, if you find a publisher. So how can people find you and stay in touch?
So you can find me on my website, which is nadinethornhill.com. I'm also on Facebook. It's facebook.com/nadine.thornhill. And I'm on Twitter at Nadine Thornhill. And those are all great ways to get in touch with me. Like I mentioned, I am on Instagram, but that's really just if you want to see pictures of my cat.
Which is an amazing reason to follow you on Instagram.
Anyway, my cat is adorable and he's super huge and just love. So yeah, if you want to see like pictures of my cat, and occasionally I do that like cheesy picture if I'm on a beach of like my legs and my feet and like water. So if you want to see like the most basic Instagram photos of my cat, follow me on Instagram.
I love it. Well, I will have links to Nadine's website, to her social media, and to all of the resources that we talked about on sexgetsreal.com for this episode, so that you can check out the books and the websites and also stay in touch with Nadine. And I just want to say thank you so much, Nadine, for joining us and fielding these questions, because you handled them 1,000 times better than I would have.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on and letting me answer questions. And thank you to your listeners for sending in those questions. Those are amazing questions.
Yeah. Yes. The Sex Gets Real listeners are awesome. So yeah, thank you to everybody who wrote in. Of course, you can go to sexgetsreal.com to send in any questions or stories that you have. If you're struggling with anything in your own sex life or relationships, you can go to donsara.com. I'm accepting new clients. And I just want to thank you so much for listening. I will talk to you next week. This is Dawn Sara with Sex Gets Real. Bye.